Hello, everyone. My name is April, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi.
Let me get my mess together here. Excuse me. Can I put this over here?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, great. Thank you. Should already have my glasses on. Okay. First of all, I'd like to thank Steve. Thank you for the opportunity to stand before my peers and give my experience strength and hope. A story that I didn't know I had in me till here recently. Got a phone call from my daughter today. She said, Ma, she said, you're nervous. I said, well, yes, of course. She said, well, you lived it. It's your story. Just go with that. So I'm going to have to pay attention to that. I used to say that I could talk in front of anyone anytime and not be afraid, but looking at all your eyeballs and smiles, I am a little nervous. I'm not going to lie to you. So thank you in advance. You're going to hear how my alcoholism led to a path of violence, hurting other people, and not caring about it. I was born in 1969 in Albuquerque, New Mexico. My parents got divorced when I was 4, and I was in my hometown of Muncie, Indiana. My dad was out of my life for several years. The person that stuck in with me most of the time was my grandfather. I don't remember him ever punishing me for bad behavior, other than he would give me a pair of scissors and say, go cut the grass. So I often, you know, was aware of that. let's see. So in my early years, from years, I'm going to say just grade school, would probably make the most sense. I was fighting in preschool. I was acting out preschool, kindergarten. Often in grade school, the notes that went home to my parents were April does not play well with others. So that's something my mom, when I graduated from high school, my mother put it on this board where everybody walked into the house to see, you know, my pictures and, of course, report cards from previous teachers. Some of my earliest memories go back to kindergarten. I'm starting to remember things that I had pushed in the back of my mind or didn't think they were important. Like I said, my grandpa was a big part of my life, so whenever I was in trouble, he actually, you know, he would come and pick us up. When I was in kindergarten, and this will just tell you the kind of little wonderful brat I was, and I remember doing this and thinking it was really funny. In my kindergarten room, we had this door with a stop sign on it that said stop or go. So I would put it on go and hide under the sink and watch as the little fellas would come in and pee on themselves, because I enjoy jumping out and scaring them. My grandfather was not pleased with that behavior, and there comes the scissors again to cut the grass. And again, my early years too, between, you know, kindergarten and second grade, I'm gonna summarize it. I was sick, in trouble, didn't feel good, anything at all. Grandpa would come pick us up from school. And I remember I couldn't wait to get upstairs in that bed, because no matter what was wrong with me, he would come at me with this teaspoon of something on a tablespoon or teaspoon. I remember thinking, well, if I just cough a little more, he'll give me more. You know, I didn't know what was in it then, but I certainly do now that it was a tablespoon of alcohol. So at an early age, I this mind-altering, I might want some more of that, really stuck with me. Let's see. Speaking of early memories, and this just happened to me not too long ago, I had a memory come back very strong that I was raped by my cousin when I was about 7 years old. So processing that sober has been wonderful. I grew up in a house where we didn't talk about anything. You know, we talked about nothing. We were shamed. I can remember feeling embarrassed and that I can visualize it now, what happened, everybody that came in the room, and nobody talked about it, you know. And apparently later, throughout my cousin's life, he had done this to several other women and eventually blew his brains out with a double-barrel shotgun. So, all right, so we're going to go to 12 years old. My grandfather died when I was 12. Absolutely devastated me. I remember sitting by his bed. I go back a little bit. I grew up in Muncie, Indiana, so it's like basketball country where I grew up. So my grandfather played basketball, and his grandfather played basketball. Back when the balls were leather and the shorts were all the way down to here, my grandfather stood at 6'5" and had size 14 shoes. the day he died, and all of his teeth in his mouth. Don't know why I'm telling you that, but that's what I feel like saying. But so I was bedside when my grandpa was, I knew he was dying, and I called my mom from the hospital because my school was right next to the hospital. I went to a school K through 12 that was part of the college in my hometown, which is Ball State University. My bedroom, I could see the stadium, and the hospital was also right next to the K through 12 facility. So I remember calling my mom, and I was just ushered away. So I had to stay with my brother and my sister. And my grandpa died in the middle of the night. I was absolutely devastated. I didn't want to go to school. I didn't want to walk back in his house. Everything just disappeared. They got rid of everything. But one thing that came to our house was this box of liquor bottles. Nobody knew that my grandfather was an alcoholic, or I didn't anyway. He was a closet alcoholic. He was an upstanding man in the community, went to church, and had no clue. So in my house, as a latchkey kid at 12 years old, was all this liquor. So I have memories of drinking and putting water in it, putting it back, trying to be sneaky. My mother didn't drink, neither did my stepdad. They married when I was 7. But something that came back just a couple months ago is I remember sitting on the swing set in the back in our backyard and drinking it as fast as I could at 12 years old and hiding it in the woods before anybody got home or any neighbor saw me. So at age 13, I was playing, I was on the JV basketball team, but I was studying, I was sitting on the junior or on the high school varsity bench, and decided, me and a friend of mine at 13 years old, that we wanted to get some liquor. And so we had an upperclassman get us each a fifth of cherry vodka. And I remember couldn't wait to drink it, never had it before. I was so excited. So we both downed this fifth of cherry vodka in little to no time. My friend passed out right on the ground before we even made it to the dance that we were trying to get drunk for. This is what we did. As soon as I walked in the school and into the dance, my coach was standing there, and I puked all over her shoes. So off to the bathroom I go, and she's literally got my hair and holding it while I'm in the throwing up, and she's smacking the shit out of me, just smacking the shit out of me. Next thing I know, I'm in the emergency room with alcohol poisoning at 13, and my mother, which was today, my mother can move faster than I can. And I learned that from experience. So my mom's name is Loretta, so you feared Loretta always. Anyway, so at 13, I have alcohol poisoning. They wanted to pump our stomachs because all we said was that we drank. And the response to me was, you've done more than drink, because any child that would drink a fifth of cherry vodka would be completely passed out, and I wasn't. So, of course, when I woke up the next morning, the door was off the hinges, my phone was gone, my basketball uniforms were no longer hanging in my closet. I woke up to this terrible smell of eggs and onions together. I thought, oh, God, you know. But that was the only thing that I didn't like about it. That day, I remember thinking, you know, that was a blast. I'm going to do that again. So I grew up like I said, in a college town, so parties were everywhere. I could literally hear parties out the back door of our house. So I would just sneak out. I didn't sneak. I just walked right out the back door and went to all kinds of college parties. Some were busted. I never got in trouble, never got caught. And as I tell this story, I've never been fearful or even showed much remorse for the damage I did to others. Was never afraid of getting caught because I thought I was smarter. I thought I could outsmart anything and anybody. So we'll get to that in a little later. Let me see. Please bear with me for the slight pause. All right. So at 16 years old, I got pregnant by my high school sweetheart. I had gave the baby up for an adoption, and for all of my life since then, I've always blamed my mother that she made me do it. And working with my sponsor, doing the four-step, this step, all of after, I've learned that my mother did what only she could with what she had. So there's been a lot of clarity, and my resentments toward my mom. I haven't made amends with my mother yet. We've talked over the phone, but she's coming at the end of the year. And I really want to make these amends with my mother face to face so that she can feel it, hear it, and see, you know, how I'm doing and that I sincerely mean it. So after 16, of course, I had my driver's license. I had a boyfriend that was older than I was. I had a job. It wasn't a very big job, but I did have a job. So the practice then was to hang out with people, steal alcohol. And I was already going through friends' parents' cabinets when I was in middle school. In middle school, I had the first experience with drinking rubbing alcohol. And I enjoyed that as well at a very young age. So at 16 years old, I was hell on wheels. Excuse my language. I know we're in a church. I apologize. But it was the damn truth. Fighting constantly. Sorry, Steve. You know, from preschool all the way, fighting and being aggressive, violent, and a dangerous person. When I was 16, I was totally off from 16 to 18. I quit playing sports because I had a boyfriend that was older. And we would go to malls or outside bars, and we would wait for people to come out. We would jump them and rob them. And sometimes with a knife or just knocking them in the head ever so hardly. And taking their money and then going to liquor store. I had a fake ID at 16. Didn't have much money, so there had to be some way to supplement for my drinking early on. At 19, I married my first ex-husband. He was my high school sweetheart. And we moved to the state of Louisiana. And boy, was it a whole different world down there at that time. Had no car. We had no phone. We lived right off a military base. He was in the Army. Everything we had to do was within walking distance. So there again, I also experienced with rubbing alcohol there. I didn't have much to do while he was at work until we got a vehicle. And then once he got a vehicle, guess where I went to work?
A bar.
Two of them, you know. One during the week, one on the weekends. I can remember trying to just find trouble. It's always just, where can I get drunk? I am drunk. Where can I hurt somebody? Or make a big show, be a big shot about something and get my way. Because that's what I did. So now we're down to two, I mentioned two experiences with drinking, rubbing alcohol. All right. My day drinking also increased there. Drank during the day, drank all day. There wasn't much to do in Louisiana but drink, and that's what I like because that's how I drank. So I moved to Nashville with my future first ex-husband. He didn't know it at the time. Moved to Nashville. Whoa, Nashville's a party city. I lived and worked right off the interstate and only 2 miles from downtown. What a blast. My kind of city, right? At the time, I was working 3 jobs. And my husband was working for a water treatment center. And I could never figure out why we were out of money all the time. And it was because he was spending his money on other substances. And so I was paying the bills and drinking at both. I worked at 2 bars and a restaurant. All of them involved drinking. I had a job during the day. That's when I started keeping liquor in my car at 22, 23 years old. In my break time from work, you know, I'd go down and hit the bottle a little bit. For years and years, I've kept cough drops on me. Every job I've drank at, every function I've been to, I kept the worst taste and smell and cough drops on me and thought it was killing the odor. Then I tried drinking, well, I'll just drink vodka. I've drank some of my favorite drinks were Wild Turkey 101, Everclear. And again, I'm going to mention the rubbing alcohol again. So 27 is when we got a divorce. Just didn't work out. So around 28, I met my second ex-husband in an airport bar. We're both flying to the same place at different times. That's a whole nother story to talk about. This is my daughter's dad to talk about him. I could really bore you to death and go on with that, but I think we get the picture. Not as violent in this relationship. He's a very calm, particular kind of fellow. So the violence wasn't there until the drinking increased. And then it started You know, well, now I've got this great husband, a great house. Now I'm just going to keep liquor everywhere, and I drank every day. And he had no idea. So one day he came to me, he said, I think you have a drinking problem. I'd like for you to go to rehab. And I got really angry. We were both, you know, I was drunk. So I grabbed his uniform, his work boots, and I threw him out the front door. He said, what are you doing that for? I said, you're going to need him. You're getting out of here. So after that, our relationship was, it took, my daughter was 4 when we filed for separation. I kind of skipped ahead. I did drink while I was pregnant with my daughter. Doctor said I could have a half a glass of red wine every now and then. All I heard was red wine. That was it. So that's hard to admit, especially I don't think my daughter has heard that, and that's why she's not here for me to talk about a lot of this stuff. I wasn't comfortable with a family member. My AA family helps me have the courage to stand up here and tell this story. So I love every one of you. Let's get back to work here. At 32, my daughter was born. It was a miracle. My life will change. You know. Now, all this time, I never had the desire or not to stop drinking. It wasn't an option for me not to drink. It's what I did from a very young age. So I started drinking and driving with my daughter. She was very familiar with the ABC stores. So at 38, we got a divorce. At age 38, 39, I met my third ex-husband. Now, he was one that really was exciting. He was a biker, full of muscles, very mean. We caused trouble everywhere we went. We had such a good old time running from the law, knocking people in the head and watching them bleed and jumping over them. It was a blast. Well, that wore off, too. That really did wear off. And again, drugs and alcohol were part of our relationship. You know, it's this man picker of mine is outstanding. You know, it's, oh, it'll be better with me. It'll be better with me, with me, with me. Well, yeah, 3 times a better man, right? Came very close to getting in trouble with the law being with him. And it just, I'm lucky I'm not in prison. Let's just say that with that relationship. I'm moving right along very quickly, so please bear with me. I'm sure I've missed some things, but I'm not doing this by my will. This is all God's will, God's strength for me to stand up here in front of all of you. All right, so at 48, I've been divorced 3 times. Moved my daughter all around, different relationships. She went to 7 different schools, kindergarten through 12th grade. At the age of 16, my daughter said, forget you, Mom, I'm going to live with Dad. Broke my heart. But I thought, well, okay, I'll just pack up and move to Upper Michigan. It's great up there, 90 inches of snow in the wintertime. Well, that was with another man, my man picker. Thank God I didn't marry this one. Boy, we fed off each other, though, in a traffic jam, jumping out, just ripping the hint anyway. So the anger, the frustration, and the violence continued through each relationship with men, and it grew more and more every time. And the drinking was always there, every day. Not even when I was pregnant was I not drinking. So let's talk about the trips to the hospital. I lost count. You know, I talked to you about that first alcohol poisoning trip when I was 13. So in between the age of 38 and 48, I don't know how many times. Pancreatitis, pneumonia, maybe I had a heart attack. My daughter has watched me get loaded in the back of an ambulance several times. And each time I thought it was something, but it was always because of alcoholism. And if I called 911 and I knew they were coming, I would drink as much liquor as I could before I got on the ambulance, before they would not give me something. In the ambulance, occasionally I would throw up in the little throw-up bag, and I would keep that liquor in case I needed it later.
Oh, yes.
So that was frowned upon. Now I want my cute, anyway. kind of nut do we have here? One time I was in the hospital and I was in bad shape. I was there for pneumonia, but alcoholism put me there with pneumonia. And you know, they ask you these silly questions, you know, hold your hand up, are you trembling? Well, I'm going to tremble just to get something, you know. But I did start, I had seizures a few times. I had tremors, hallucinations. And this one time when I was being treated for pneumonia, I brought the house down because they needed to bring me a drink. I argued with every nurse on the floor and every doctor. And guess what they finally did? They brought me a Bud Light. And I was so flippin' mad it was a Bud Light, not a regular Budweiser. You know? So that's the way I drank. One other thing I want to point out is this big book I have in front of me. The pages are all nice and brown from it. I've had this book since 2015, and it's not from opening it. It's from it sitting on a shelf and being in a house that people smoke. So this is the first time I've opened this book. I've always been a daddy's girl, but we've almost been like friends. You know, my dad, you have a drinking problem. My dad's 35 years sober. He is an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. He said he's too old to go to meetings all the time now, but boy, he can sure quote the crap. So my dad, you know, you need rehab. No, I don't have the money for it. I don't want rehab. I don't have a problem. You know, I'm fine. This is what I have to do. I used to tell my dad that AA meetings were 45 miles away from wherever I lived. That was my excuse. No, I'm not going to AA. I went to an AA meeting one time with my father, and it was 30 years ago, and the room was so friggin' smoky, and we were playing poker. It was like an all-around poker. You know, and I remember then thinking, these people are fun. And I was very young. That's what I thought. But that's really my only true time being in the room sober. I've attended a few AA meetings and had liquor in the car. I've ran to a liquor store. I've been to them drunk. I have been thrown out of an AA meeting before. I was very obnoxious, mean, making fun of people. Out the door I went. They asked me very politely and sternly to remove myself from the room. I have been back to that group, and it is always, you know, like AA meetings, always welcome with open arms. Okay. So I talked about my dad, and I want to tell you a story about my dad. My mom decided to have an intervention with me 4 years ago. So I was working in a local restaurant in Smithfield, and we were drinking moonshine that day, but ran out of liquor in my purse and in the restaurant. So I decided, well, I'll go over next door and get a lottery ticket and pick up those little bottles of whatever it is there, hot stuff. And I'm walking out of the building and going literally within walking distance to my job, and I hear this man's voice go, April Sue. I turn around, it's my dad. The first thing that came to my mind was, who's dead? And he said, hey, good looking, what are you doing? And he's distracting me because my mother, Loretta, got out of the other side of the vehicle. Now, my parents divorced when I was 4. They tolerated each other, and my mom was very kind of letting us go to see my dad on weekends. But as far as riding in the vehicle together was, I knew somebody was dead. Well, guess who is dead? Me. Yeah. So they said, well, we're here to spend the weekend with you. We think you drink too much and you need some help. Well, I got to go get my car. They wanted me to just go straight with them to the hotel. I said, no, I got to have my car. I don't know what excuse I made up, but I knew that I needed to get to my car because I had liquor in my car. So they take me to my car, and my dad followed me in to make sure I wasn't going to grab any bottles. I had bottles everywhere, like most of us have. So I get in my car and I follow Mom's and Dad together in this vehicle, and I'm thinking, oh, this is going to be a shit show. This is not going to be fun. So I played along. I drank before I get to it's a hotel there in Smithfield by Food Lion, and I was living 6 miles away, and I finished a half a fifth before I even got there. So now I'm good to go. Yeah, everything's fine. And my dad's trying to get me to look at rehabs in this little business area, and all I could think about the whole time is, I don't care they're here. All I want is a drink. If they would just leave me alone and get out of my way. So the next morning, of course, I was just shaking and jonesing for a drink. So I thought I was going to be crafty. Well, I was crafty. I said, you know, I would love it if you guys would go pick up a breakfast for us. Where do we need to go? Well, if you would go, and I tried to send them all the way, you know, if you could go to Newport News, there's a great IHOP there. No. My dad looks up and says, there's Wendy's. We'll go to Wendy's. Thank God they went together. So from the time of the Hampton Inn and Suites in Smithfield, my parents get in the car to go to Wendy's to get breakfast. They went together. Now, remember, they were arguing over who was going to pay. But anyway, so while they're going this way, I don't want to move my car because they'll know I've gone somewhere. So I put it in high gear and I run past Food Lion to the ABC store, come out of the ABC store, and I'm unscrewing the lid before I took 5 steps. And now I'm guzzling it, running back to my car, hopefully to get up in the room before they got back. I had to hide the liquor in my car, so now through the evening, I'm thinking of every excuse to go to my car to drink. Guess what? I wasn't fooling anybody the whole time I thought I was. It was heartbreaking when my mother left and said, we know you've been drunk this whole time. And what that meant coming from my mom, to me, the way I took it was, you're just a piece of shit, you know. And from my dad, it was just one of those, better luck next time, kid, you know. I think my dad can relate to my disease, because he also suffers from alcoholism. My mother used to call me Jim Jr. That's, Jim is my dad's first name, and I wore it with a badge. Love my dad, and I still do. So I've talked to you about the wonderful intervention. I want to talk to you about January 25th of 2023. That is my sobriety date. And on January 25th of 2023, a loved one came up to me, handed me a bottle because I'd sent him to the liquor store. And he said, I just hate to see you killing yourself this way. And in an instant, I said, I want to go to rehab. So I now think that that was my first experience in my conscious contact with God, because all through my life, there was no desire to stop drinking. I was drinking to breathe. I was drinking to be me. That was it. So we called, before we called 911, of course, if I'm going out, I'm going to the liquor store first. Up to the liquor store we go, come back to the house, call 911. So when I got to the emergency room from this call, they said my blood alcohol content was 0.352. And yeah. But guess what? I was functioning, kind of. I decided that I was going to set up, that I was going to rehab, and that I was going to go ahead and set it up right then and there. But I can't find my phone anywhere. So I call my daughter on my phone, and I say, where's my phone? I need to make a phone call. Mom, do I need to come down there? No. So that same night, with that blood alcohol content, I pre-registered with Pyramid in Newport News to go to rehab after I detoxed. I could not detox at Pyramid because of my blood alcohol content and the tremors, the seizures I had in the emergency room that night. So I spent 2 nights in the emergency room, and then I went to Virginia Beach for 3 days of detox. I was heavily medicated, Valium, Seroquel, and 3 days later I went straight from there, come home, packed a bag, and off to Pyramid. Rehab. So when I walked through the door at Pyramid, you know, it was kind of like, oh man. My daughter was by my side. And of course, I'm nervous and shaking, and she just grabs my face with her little hands and looks me in the eye. She says, it's okay, Mom. You can do this. So when I was in rehab, I knew that this is exactly where I was supposed to be. Parts of it were very difficult for me. There was a lot of violence and fighting. A lot of the women on my floor, there were 35 of us, and a lot of them were court-ordered. Some of them family-ordered, and very few of us were there by our own will. So there was, and it ranged from 18 to, I think the oldest lady when I was there was like 72, 73. Excuse me. So to see fights going on and me not to jump in was just a damn miracle, you know. I would call my daughter and I'd say, oh, come get me out of here. I can't handle this because I'm going to end up in jail because of just the pettiness. And her calm voice was my rock to reassure me, this is where you need to be, Mom. She's later told me that those words were not easy for her to say, that she wanted to come get me. But she knew if she did, she would just be getting me out of my own mess of alcoholism. So we talked about that. After I got out of rehab, I was there for 28 days. The next day I went to an AA meeting. And I didn't have a sponsor once I got out. But I felt that I had worked some of the steps. We had AA meetings in rehab. I worked on steps 1 through 3. And of course, when I met up with my sponsor, we also went through it. But I want to tell you a little bit about my sponsor. When I asked Faye to be my sponsor, it was a meeting that she wasn't supposed to be at. And God really worked it out in a special way. And some of the story still blows my mind. I heard her speak and I asked her, would you be my sponsor? You know, she asked me, are you done yet? Oh yeah, I'm done. And so we're standing there talking about, she's telling me where she lives. I was telling her where I live. And I said, you know, that dirt road you live on, I used to date a guy. And she stepped back and she said, oh my God, you're Bruce's April. I said, yes, I am. Her daughter had said, whatever you do, do not go around April. Stay away from her. You know, she's trouble. You'll be trouble too. You will not mix. Stay away from her. So that day, Faye goes home and shares with her daughter that, guess who I'm sponsoring? And her daughter said, oh, great, you guys will be good for each other. I think she said that because she had seen such a change in her mom, and she knew that she could handle it. You know, so God put us in each other's way, way before then. I got married to my best friend November 25th of 2022. My best friend of 20 years. He's 20 years older than I am. But he's always taken care of me. He's enabled me to drink. He's put a roof over my head. He's moved me in and out of houses from several different men. So he finally asked me, so why don't you just marry me? That way you can be set, you know, not have to worry about where you're going to go. I said, okay. I don't know where I was going with that. But anyway. Oh, yeah. Thank you. I read some of this by her earlier. So, it was the day before we got married. No, it was the day we got married. I'm in the Dollar Tree, and I don't remember what I was buying. That's not important. But this nice lady in a hat was standing behind me. And I'm drunk, of course. And I was telling her, I'm getting married tomorrow. And I don't remember what else I said. And she said, well, where? Maybe I'll come. And I remember looking for her that day. Because I didn't have many female friends ever. They didn't like hanging around me. She didn't come. So, for Father's Day, we took a road trip. And we're coming back from this road trip, Faye and I, and we're talking about things, and it hit us both at the same moment. You were the lady in the Dollar Tree. You were the lady in the Dollar Tree. And there's other occasions, you know, being there just, 100 yards from her house with a man that was, you know, her daughter said to stay away from me. And my daughter's dad actually foreclosed or sold a house through her. This was, 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. So that's how I met my sponsor. Okay. So meeting my sponsor, we start working the steps. And I do believe that January 25th of 23 was my first conscious contact with God when I said, I'll go to rehab. I feel that all in my heart. The day I went to rehab, you know, I admitted I was powerless over alcohol and that my life had become unmanageable. Now I put in people, places, and things. You know, sometimes the littlest thing I have to realize that I'm powerless over what you might think or you might say, your actions. And if I dwell on that, it becomes unmanageable. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. It was rehab and no fight. I was there and I knew that I needed help. I remember sitting on my bed looking out, because Pyramid is on right on the river down in Newport News, looking out at all the shipping lanes and the lights and finding serenity there. I felt like I was in a safe place. felt like I was safe for myself, I would have to say there. So another step in rehab, you know, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as I understood Him. You know, when I came out of rehab, there was no doubt that those three events had occurred, those three steps. I still work them all constantly. When I got to my fourth step, I was ready and willing and couldn't wait to do my fourth step because I wanted this crap gone out of my head, my behavior, turning to, you know, alcohol and bad choices in men. So when my sponsor said, well, you're going to figure out who you're mad at, what they did, what part of self affected you, and what part of it did I cause that I'm responsible for? So admit to God, to ourselves, and one other person, the exact nature of our wrongs. Well, that word right there, our wrongs. Whoa, April. Wow. Got it on paper, now I'm talking to another person. So relieving. You know, I felt free for the first time in my life. I felt like I could be myself. Look myself in the mirror. We're entirely ready to have God move these defects of character. Yes, entirely ready, daily. As you all know, we work these steps and practice all these principles in all our affairs. So some days it's all steps. Other days it's just some of them. Humbly ask God to remove our shortcomings. Well, humble to me means I trust in God to help me, you know, to remove my shortcomings. Made a list of all persons we had harmed, became willing to make amends to them. Oh, yeah, I'll make a list. And I'm thinking, oh, this is going to go great. Everybody's going to say, oh, yeah, okay, it's good now. Made direct amends whenever possible. There's a few people that just wanted nothing. My daughter's dad, he still has my number blocked, and my daughter has told him, you know, Mom's sober. Yeah, how long will this last? You know. Made amends over the phone with people up north. Made direct amends to people in my life in this area. All right, so I got a story to tell with step 10, all right? Continue to take personal inventory, and we're wrong, promptly admit it. So I guess I was probably about 6 or 7 months sober, and I was in a traffic jam coming down 620, and this lady, I lost it, completely lost it. I was on her rear end. I was waving that favorite finger to her, and I'm totally uncontrollable. I'm yelling. She can see me yelling and screaming at her. So I lay back a little bit to see where she's going because I was sure damn going to chase her down because she did it wrong. She pulls in the 7-Eleven. I thought, I got you now. Jump out of the truck with all my ego right here just blazing, and the woman looks at me like she'd seen a ghost. She was scared to death, and it just hit me. Well, I went into 7-Eleven, and I come back. She still won't get out of her car, and it hit me right then as I walked out the door. You know, so I went to her window and, Petey, just roll your window down a little bit, just a little bit. And I said, I was completely wrong. Please forgive me. I apologize if I scared you. I was completely wrong. You did nothing wrong. She just rolled her window back up. Off she went. So. So step 11, my favorite part, step 11, is praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. That sentence there comes across my mouth a lot and day, you know, daily. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these affairs, practice all these principles in all our affairs. I want to share one other thing with you real quick. When I was about 7 months sober, I called my sponsor and said, I got a problem. She said, what's wrong? I said, I cannot stop looking at the rubbing alcohol. I was made upset. I asked the love of my life to stay in the house. I needed someone around me. And he walked out the door. And I couldn't. I kept going back in the bathroom. So I called my sponsor. And she said, okay. She said, can you pour it out? I said, I don't know. She poured out. You want to call me back? No. I wasn't going to pour it out. I was devastated. I thought, oh, gosh, look what I've blown. My sponsor told me, though. She said, you know what, just let's work on this together. Pour it down the drain, and I'll be right here with you. And she did. And I felt like I was going backwards at that time, but I wasn't. She said I did the right thing. I called my sponsor. You know. So staying sober, I go to meetings, sometimes every night. You know, I talk to my sponsor, I work the steps. I lean to all of you quite a bit. I'm so glad to see all of you here. I think that about wraps it up for me. Thank you for letting me share tonight.
I'm always struck by the similarities of the stories. I too come from a place that basketball is religion. I too had nothing but report cards and job performance reviews that said the same thing. Excels, 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 but does not play well with others. I'm hopeful after last year that goes away. We shall see. Our seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Money collected at this meeting covers rent, supplies, the rest is given to Tidewater Intergroup Council. Are there any AA related announcements?
My name's Faye and I'm an alcoholic.
Hello, Faye.